Hello and welcome to another episode of Tech Enthusiast. I'm Neil.
I'm Simon. And as promised, this week, no mention of mobile phones.
No mobile.
Which means there's going to be some kind of forfeit if either of us talk about phones beyond this point.
Which point?
That one back then.
Right, okay.
So no mentioning.
Okay.
So I'll let you start us off to avoid talking about...
anything you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double digits as well, episode 10.
Oh, killing
that
it.
Means we've been doing this for numerous weeks.
More than 10 weeks, thanks to illness and travels. And
yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, the first thing I wanted to talk about this week was something that came out of DARPA. If you don't know what DARPA is, it's basically the American military's big robotics killing machines.
It's not always killing.
It includes.
Did you remember that crazy one they did? Sorry to jump in on this and ruin it for you already.
That was going to charge its batteries by.
No, that one where the robot had to get in the car, start the car.
Oh, yeah.
And then drive it.
Because they hold a big thing, like a big robotics event every year, don't they, where people compete and they get like robots trying to open doors.
Yeah, they're given a challenge and the robot has to achieve a particular challenge.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was DARPA that did the really, really twisted sounding robot that I think it went out onto the battlefield to try and help people out medically, but it recharged its own batteries by eating any kind of carrion it came across.
Oh my God. Any type of carrion.
So basically, it found any organic matter, it would use that to recharge its batteries, and people were like, right, so limbs and things? Yeah. It'd be able to use that. No, that's not what you should be saying.
No. Backtrack.
Yeah. So moving away from the killing machines, they're doing some pretty cool stuff. They did have a video out in February of somebody rock climbing with a prosthetic robot arm, which just sounds nuts.
That does sound impressive. It would probably improve my rock climbing if it was done by the robot.
Quite possibly so. But what they've done now is, with a prosthetic arm, they have been able to restore somebody's touch sense. Which just sounds crazy.
Touch sense allows you to grasp things as well. That's
really you've got powerful. Pressure sensitivity.
So being able to pick up, you know, things like a glass without shattering it.
Yeah.
And being able to hold on to something like a tool firmly enough, even if you just want to hold someone's hand or...
Yeah, anything.
Not break someone's arm when you tap them or whatever.
Yeah. So it just sounds absolutely crazy.
Isn't it crazy that they're able to interface... With the human body.
Yeah, that's the ultimate hack, really.
Yeah, because studying sort of psychology, it, bit of a pun, does blow your mind. That we're able to create technology that can interface with essentially a system that we don't understand fully how it works.
Yeah, apparently interfaces directly with the brain.
So not even with the nerves in the arm?
No.
It's sending signals directly to the brain?
Signals directly to the brain, and it was apparently... Because the guy that... an anonymous 28-year-old guy who'd had a spinal injury was the test subject.
Oh, so they had to bypass enough of it?
Yeah.
Because of spinal injury.
And he said that basically it was as close to 100% as you know, really mattered. One thing, the hand had fingers on it, individual fingers, and they got blindfolded him and were touching individual fingers on a robot hand, and he could feel it. And one of the guys basically touched two fingers at the same time without telling him, and he was like, "He messing me about here or what?"
So what's going to be first then, RoboCop or Terminator?
I think RoboCop,
I think RoboCop's going to come first.
Yeah.
Before, you know, Skynet takes over. Because artificial intelligence is not particularly... It's not as good as what people perceive it to be.
Nowhere near. But then, I mean, RoboCop was essentially a computer. There's very little of the human there.
No, there was a lot of human there. That's why RoboCop worked in Ed 209 and all the others didn't, because there just wasn't enough human and enough soul there. If you've even seen any of the RoboCop films, I'm questioning your RoboCop knowledge right now.
Your move, creep.
I can actually remember back in the day researching RoboCop heavily online.
Really?
Yeah, and you know the gun that he has?
Oh, yeah.
Back then, you couldn't really do CGI effects on guns.
No, so it's a practical effect.
It did fire a 6-foot flame.
Really?
Yeah, it fired a 6-foot flame out of a handgun.
That's crazy.
So the machine... And I was like, what? That was a real gun? But you just imagine these things to be post and CGI. You don't think that they're real. But yeah, that existed, that gun.
That's crazy.
And there might be a few people out there that don't know what that gun is. It's worth looking that up on YouTube, because that gun...
Or may only have seen the remake.
Well, that'll probably be CGI. That probably won't be a real gun.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so if you... We need to put this in the show notes. A video of RoboCop's gun. Because it was just an insane gun.
It was an insane gun. Yeah.
Can you remember the folding gun as well from RoboCop 2?
Not so much.
Can you remember the teenage kid? It was like a little box. And then he would fold it and turn it into a gun.
Nope, don't remember
that.
Yeah,
RoboCop was real next gen on its gun design. It was really out there.
So, yeah, I don't remember that one at all.
That was a slight digression.
Yeah. I remember watching RoboCop when I was far too young to be watching RoboCop.
You know, one of the things I really liked about RoboCop?
Go on.
The commercials that were interweaved into the film. TV commercials for, like, suntan cream that was factor 6,000.
Yeah.
Oscorp brings you suntan cream. Yeah, they were cool.
So, yeah. So that was really, really impressive, the fact that they can literally hack into the human body and recreate something that we don't really fully understand.
Yeah, it's real black boxing in terms of they know the inputs and outputs that are required, so they can replicate it, but they don't know how it's replicated.
Yeah.
I watched a TED talk about 2 years ago, because we still have no idea how vision works.
Yeah.
The retina is actually made in reverse. In terms of the system, if you were to design it, it's made the wrong way around.
Oh, right.
The light sensitive cells are at the back.
Crazy.
It's really weird. So you wouldn't make it like that. And a team of engineers had come up with a generalized algorithm to send the correct signals down the optical nerve to replace the retina. But they weren't doing it how the retina necessarily does.
Right.
They were just mimicking the output, which just seems incredible. So this device, theoretically, could be like a replacement eye or a robotic eye.
Yeah.
A bit more Geordi, you know, from Star Trek style, where you could put on a visor and then have, you know, some interface on your temples, and it would send the information straight to the optical nerve and just bypass your eyes.
Yeah.
Which... That's incredible.
The amount of kids who risk blindness in the 90s by putting the Sisters Alice band on in the front of their eyes to pretend to be Geordie LaForge.
Geordie was cool.
He was awesome.
Geordie was cool. I still follow him now on Twitter.
All right, cool.
He does a lot of... he does the reading rainbow, doesn't he? Promotes reading and children's stuff. See, he does some great stuff nowadays, actually.
Cool.
What other news have we got there, Neil?
What other news indeed? Well, Amazon have just released something that looks suspiciously like an Apple TV.
You're telling me that someone else has copied Ive's designs?
No.
No one does that?
Well, I mean, it is essentially a small black square box, so...
In their defence, what can you do that's original in that space?
Yeah.
It just needs to be a functional, acceptable box.
Yeah, and if you look at the design of any kind of set-top box over the past 20 years, the design has just become more and more minimal because there's just no need.
There was one, and this has popped in my head. I should have researched this. I always say that. But the design in it looked like a cube that was dropping through your entertainment system.
Yeah, I remember that.
Who was it?
That wasn't the Ouya, was it?
No.
No, it was something else.
It was someone in it, but yeah, it was an interesting design. Yeah. They made it like a 3D cube that was just dropping through. So, yeah, I don't think you can do much, but what is interesting is the spec. It's got Alexa.
Yep.
And it does 4K. And I almost think Amazon have never got the hardware game together apart from the Kindle line.
Yeah.
But could they sneak in the back door and really get the home automation thing kickstarted?
Could do.
In terms of, for me, I want my home automation. I just want to speak in a room and get my questions answered.
Yeah.
I want to speak in a room with the lights change.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, Alexa does already tie into smart things, doesn't it? So
yeah, so that's what I want. And if they can get it into the home at a really low price point...
Yeah.
Because I assume with Alexa on it, it's got a microphone built in.
Yeah, the remote's got the mic on it.
Yeah. I think the mic needs to start going into the device itself. Because then you can just walk in a room and talk.
Yeah.
Having to, you know, talk into the remote, I think, is a little disjointed.
Yeah. I don't... Well, yeah. I presume that's how the last Fire TV worked. I'm not entirely certain where... I just presumed it would be the same.
It could be, because the Apple TV is speaking into the remote, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the other interesting announcement is the new...
So they stole that from the Fire TV. Circles and roundabouts.
Yeah, everyone steals Apple's designs, but Apple just steal everyone else's ideas. Yeah. I think that's the way it works.
Yeah.
The other exciting device from Amazon today, the cheap tablet.
Yeah.
$50 like, for a tablet.
Yeah, I've paid more than that for aspirin.
$50 is such a low price point.
It's ridiculously low.
Because... Reel off some specs. What have we got? What do we get for $50?
For $50, you have got a 7-inch tablet, nice, which is quad-core, 1.3 gigahertz processor. And it's got 8 gig of storage, but it's got a micro SD slot, so you can expand that to 128 gig.
What's interesting is they're selling them in 6-packs.
Which is crazy.
It's actually buy 5, get 1 free.
Wow.
I'm not too sure who's going to buy it at that price point, whether people are going to... simply buy them as gifts.
Yeah.
$50 is realistically in gift range.
Definitely.
At Christmas, you could give everyone a tablet.
Yeah, quite easily.
It just... Yeah, it seems incredible. We're getting to a real sort of price point where these things are coming commodities.
Yeah.
It's happening in the wearable space. You can now get, like, a fitness tracker for $15.
Yeah.
You know, so £10... for a fitness tracker.
Which is nuts.
And it puts us at a very interesting point in technology. As technology becomes a commodity, the only thing you have to do is innovate. Which means the next few years, in terms of products, could be fascinating.
Yeah.
What's going to come out to shake up those sectors? Or is there going to be a new sector that diminishes those things?
Yeah.
Because the tablets are great. Great point. The PC had got to a point where for sub £200, you're buying a computer. You can still get it for sub £200.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, tablet. You're like, what's this device? It's like a computer,
but
out
not
of Star Trek. A lot of Star Trek references.
There is, isn't there? Yeah, doing quite well today.
So I'm very excited for the future. The price points are low enough now to do really interesting things. And at $50, you can start having very specific uses for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would love if there was an Android tablet of that quality, the $50 price point.
Yeah.
I would have it as a clock on my wall, because for me, I need to ask the time.
Yeah.
So I could always just say, OK, Google, what's the time?
Mm.
Or just say, OK, Google, what's the weather? So I'm getting closer to that home automation, voice-triggered stuff. So $50...
It's a shame.
Is a price point.
It's a shame that Amazon is Android but not Android. You know what I mean?
Yeah, their closed store system. Yeah. It is a bit of a shame. But talking about Android, Android are now going to allow you to stream games straight to YouTube.
Yeah, from tablets or other devices.
Yeah, smaller than tablet devices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ones that aren't tablets.
YouTube had to get in on this market.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's Android, it's Google, it's YouTube, it's all the same. It just works out so easily for them to do it, I guess, or easier than it would do to do it cross-platform.
That's one of the interesting things about Google, though. They own enough of the platforms to make this possible.
Yeah.
Apple don't have a video streaming platform like YouTube to be able to do it, which means they've got to partner. Can you imagine Apple partnering with...
When you say partner, do you mean buy?
I think anyone in this space would be too expensive for Apple to acquire. I know they paid $3 billion for Beats.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine them doing billion-dollar deals.
No, I suppose they'd want somebody they know can handle it, and it'd have to be one of the big boys.
I don't think they could build it themselves.
No.
I don't know. I really see Apple falling behind a little bit on that. Which is a shame, because the Apple TV would be a fantastic platform for that.
Yeah.
It is a shame.
Well, yeah, and I guess with the Fire TV, is there an app store on there? Because I know, again, it's not Google, but it's got its own app store.
It's got its own app store.
So you're going to be able to get games, and the vast majority of the Amazon games, you know, the big names, are on there anyway, so...
Yeah. Apple have also just changed the requirements that all games need to support the Apple remote, which is the right move.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want to do is be searching through that store, and then you're like, oh, does it work on this remote? Does it work on the device that came with the product?
It would be incredibly pointless to allow people to not support the control device that comes with the entire device. It'd just be ridiculous.
Absolutely. And currently we haven't seen how much games and apps are going to be on the Apple TV. But they're at the price point where it's all compulsive purchases.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse in terms of producing a compulsive purchase if I have to research it.
Mm.
So if I have to go in and go, does it work? Oh, no.
Yeah,
all of a
sudden, I don't want to
bother now. Yeah, you've lost sales. So it was absolute right decision. It's perhaps going to restrict initially who's willing to come to the store.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get those big exploring sort of games that are massive.
Yeah, I think I'm wondering really, because some of the games, like even Angry Birds, for example, the control pad, the touchpad, they seem to imply that it was swipes, you know, rather than
tap,
actual...
Tap, tap.
Well, rather than tap, 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 or literally kind of precision touch, or as precision as you can get with touch. So would Angry Birds work? Because with Angry Birds, you've got to keep your finger down, angle, you've got to pick your distance.
Yeah, so you're wondering if there's an inertia to the swipes.
Yeah, or whether it is literally just for swipes.
The Apple TV is going to be out sooner than we think.
Yeah.
It's got an October release date.
Oh, right.
So
the corner, then.
We'll know in 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm predicting just beyond mid-October. If I add that, yeah, it's got to be mid to late October, and it'll come out just before pre-orders for the iPad Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, just touching back on the commodities thing for a second, it really kind of, when you were saying about, like, how cheap, you know, like a £15 fitness tracker.
Oh, no, the $15, yeah.
Yeah, $15 fitness tracker. It kind of calls into question how much you're paying for the brand as well. When you've got the bigger boys, the fitness trackers, I mean, obviously there's more to them. You've got an ecosystem, you've got a community.
It's the ecosystem and the community you're paying for, because they're all buying the chips from the same suppliers. Only a few key suppliers of those chips. All the chips have pretty much equal capabilities.
Yeah.
So then it's... Everyone's using very similar algorithms.
Yeah.
And it does come down to that ecosystem. Fitbit has done it very well.
Yeah.
The Fitbit ecosystem is great. The app is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, it was great because the way they use the display data, I complained a little bit to them. And they changed the way weight works on it now, which is great. It's far better now.
Cool.
And I really need to put that up on my blog as a bit of a win, because I was talking to the guy saying, no, you should do it like this, because then it's far more sort of readable than someone who can't see, as well as someone who can see if you're quick scanning. Because essentially, if you're weighing yourself a lot, you just want a table so you can go and quick look. But they were displaying it on a graph.
On a graph.
And it was that small that you couldn't really get the granular.
An accurate kind of, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of the time, you're interested in trends or exact amounts. So you can get the trend from the graph, but not... Exactly.
Yeah, I think a lot of apps like that tend to use graphs because it does give you that kind of glanceable. Is the line going in the right direction?
Yeah, sometimes that is all you want, but if it's your weight, you're generally getting a bit anal about it, and you want to know.
Yeah,
And Jawbone also has a very interesting ecosystem.
I've not seen the Jawbone stuff.
That one helps recommend things you should be doing and stuff. But the real power, and some of them are doing this now, is they're looking how you can monetize that information in terms of, if you're doing this much exercise, we recommend you use this particular supplement.
Right.
Go on this particular diet. Hey, here's some fitness clothing that you might be into because we know you like doing this.
Mm.
And you're buying into that, whereas if you buy something for £10, it does your steps, yeah, tracks your sleep.
I'm not sure how much I like that recommending stuff. I got an email from Amazon the other day that said, hey, here's a bunch of things that you've bought that other people have bought multiple times. Want to buy them again?
Recommending marketing, it has to exist.
Yeah.
For us to enjoy a lot of the things we get for free.
Yeah.
It's a necessary, I don't want to call it an evil, because I find it quite intriguing sometimes.
Yeah.
There's quite a few things that popped on Facebook where I thought, oh, I might have that. In fact, there was one the other day on our favourite websites, crowdfunding. It was for a carbon fibre minimalist wallet. I was like, want? It's probably never going to be made, and I will certainly never get it when they say I will, but want?
Yeah.
So
at least you'd be able to leave it in your will to one of your sons.
Yeah, that's probably about the rough time frame, to be honest. I forgot what the original thread we were talking about. Oh, we're talking about, yeah, the commoditization, yeah, of certain tech.
But I think, I mean, I understand what you're saying about the ecosystem and stuff, but surely to a certain degree, once that stuff's up and running, it can't cost the same amount to keep running, can it?
Are you assuming the cost of me buying that product goes towards the run of that service?
Well, that's what I'm saying. How much are you paying for the brand? How much are you paying for the name Fitbit? How much are you paying for the name, you know?
Realistically, the Fitbit probably cost £2 to make. The, yeah, rest of it is the marketing.
Yeah.
I would imagine running the ecosystem isn't that expensive.
Yeah.
But it's a the Fitbit is the premium brand.
Yeah.
You know, arguably, the iPhone has a 35 to 40% profit margin. That could, yeah, be a lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then there's the argument, obviously. I didn't even pick up on it. You could have skipped over that and I totally wouldn't have realised. I don't know what the forfeit is, but you got it.
Oh, man. I felt I was led into it by yourself there.
No trickery here, mate.
Oh.
Never mind. I'll figure out a suitable punishment for you at some point. But yeah. Yeah, so price of things. Yeah, I guess there's that theory, isn't there? And I think it's a bit of a psychological trick that people play on us, where if something's too cheap, You don't trust it.
That does work. That is a pricing strategy. Because, for example, PKG... they're a consulting firm who help you decide what the maximum price someone is willing to pay for your product.
Yeah.
And that's how products are actually priced. Yeah. It's nothing to do with... Well, I say nothing.
Yeah.
And obviously, it does have something to do with it. But that company will help you maximise what the selling price of your product should be. And they work a lot with... something that I'm not allowed to mention. to really maximise.
Yeah.
And, for example, network operators are advised to make their packages so they cannot be directly compared to a competitor.
Right.
So, you know, when you're looking at a list of how much data we get, how many calls... it's like, oh, I can't directly do it because you get more of this and that and less of that and you can never directly...
Yeah,
the comparison. They're actually advised to do that.
So that it makes it difficult to compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Swines.
Yeah. It's very annoying, but that's the industry. So products are never perhaps priced with the manufacturing cost and marketing budget is the sole consideration. It's how can we maximise this price point?
Yeah. Then you get companies that name things differently and make it seem like what they're giving you is better than the other thing, even though it's the same but with a different name. And
Yeah. Give it a fancy trademark name to say, hey, look, is our unique selling point. It's the same as the others, but don't know. It's...
yeah.
But, you know, eventually things commoditize because, again, the other thing, I'm not allowed to mention it, but the price is heavily dropping on those too. I feel like saying not allowed to mention it is pretty much mentioning it. But yeah, they're getting to the price point as well where it's commoditized. So innovation is needed. There's got to be, in the next 2-3 years, in 2 or 3 of the biggest sort of tech areas right now, massive innovation.
Yeah.
So very interesting times. Do we have anything else that pops up in the news?
Speaking of innovation... Facebook are considering making an innovation to the way that you interact with the website.
Yes. Unfortunately, a lot of the media were calling it the dislike.
It's been ridiculously misreported.
Absolutely. Zuckerberg himself said it was to empathise. And I think an empathy button plays better. They were never going to use dislike.
No.
Dislike has too many negative connotations.
Yeah.
People will use it to be cruel.
Definitely.
It doesn't fit many situations anyway.
No.
But I think the most... it's something needed, but the really interesting thing for me is that button is to denote empathy. This is going to be one of the biggest tests of like communications from a tech company ever.
Yeah.
What are they going to name it? It's really going to shape people's thought process, the way people talk about it, how it's used. There's going to be so much thought put into the naming of this.
And how's it going to work? Is it going to be a static button or is it going to have to be dynamic?
In terms of you enable whether it's there or not?
Well, no, in terms of I don't know.
Assuming changes for the situation.
Exactly.
I don't think it's going to do that.
Do you not?
I think they're going to choose one catch-all name, and that's why it's going to be an interesting piece of communication. Because what is going to capture... Because they're probably going to identify, let's say, 10 situations that they feel this button is going to be able to comment on. And I think that's how they're going to do it. They're not going to try and do... everything. They're going to say, oh, it should be used in this situation.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be very interesting what they choose to name it.
Yeah. For anyone who's not entirely certain what we're talking about, I've experienced it a few times where you're scrolling through Facebook and you see somebody's posted, granddad's in hospital, it's not looking good, sad face or whatever. Mm. And you'd look below the status and there's like 15 likes. And like, but that just doesn't seem an appropriate response to that status.
It's really not, and that's because I think the use of the like button slowly shifted.
Yeah.
As time progressed, in terms of offering support for the post.
Yeah.
Despite whether it was liking, empathising.
Yeah.
Agreeing.
It's almost like a read receipt. You know, it's like, I've read this and I'm acknowledging that I've read it.
That's probably a very accurate description for it.
Yeah.
That really is. So, yeah, it's a bit of a nod, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to what they're going to name it.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, but...
It's going to be copied by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Straight away. You know, what the internet is, like 1.4 billion users. That reminds me. Really interesting tidbit I read... God, I'm really trying to mute my watch. A really interesting tidbit I read. WhatsApp is now up to 900 million users.
Really?
They only have 50 engineers.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the system is coded in Erlang.
Right.
Yeah. Who's heard of that?
Not me.
It's a parallel programming language, so it's made for quick communication.
All right.
And they're saying that it's a very minimally used language nowadays. So you don't really find, you know, high-end Erlang programmers. So yeah. They find just great people and they have 1 week to learn Erlang.
Crazy.
And then you're on the team. And yeah, I think when they were bought out, they had 35 engineers. So they've only added 15 engineers to get to 900 million users. So we're looking at 1.4 billion users for Facebook.
Yeah.
I dread to think how many engineers Facebook have. I know it's a far more complex system, but I just found it interesting. 50 engineers. That's a tiny company still.
Yeah.
And it's worth obscene amount. Per member of staff, it's surely got to be one of the most... Well, they're not really making money. But per employee... must be one of the most valuable companies in the world.
That's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I was honestly shocked to find out it was so few people.
Speaking of updates to communication applications, did you hear about the Snapchat update?
Oh, where you can pay to watch previous snaps?
No. The weird little animations that it's brought in.
No.
One of my colleagues at work was showing me, but basically when you're either taking a photo or filming like you do on Snapchat, one of the short videos, there's some new buttons by the side which do numerous different things. The one my friend showed me was basically it's really weird. You press the button and like if it's on your face, if you've got it on you or on somebody else, all of a sudden you get a wire map of the face, which then disappears. And then my mate said, I was like, what's that supposed to do? My mate went, open your mouth. And as I opened my mouth, my face on screen turned into this weird, like, horror mask with sharpened teeth and, like, white skin. And
what?
Yeah. There's another one where if you stick your tongue out, it looks like a rainbow's coming out of your mouth. And like, if you move,
I bet that took 50 engineers.
Yeah, but you move your tongue around and the rainbow moves with it, and it looks unbelievable. It's crazy.
And these effects are real time.
Yeah,
that's quite impressive.
Yeah, they're happening real time. Like I say, you see the wire map of your face happen really quickly, and it disappears, and then the effects can be added. But yeah, really bizarre. And then you can upload that as a video to Snapchat or a snap, should I say, to Snapchat.
No, did not see that.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but kind of cool.
Yeah, that is weird.
The horror one was really freaky. I was not expecting it. Kind of freaked me out a little bit.
I think we're pretty much getting into our interesting articles of the week, Neil.
What interesting article of the week.
I know, we need like a little...
Yeah, we need to be attacky.
It's called a stinger.
Yeah, we it's need to be a tacky radio station.
We do, we need... And I want animal noises. I want roaring lions, alligator noises.
No.
I'm going to get it.
Yeah, but I'm in charge of the buttons. So.
No, I think they should release a secondary app where I can have some buttons as well.
Yeah.
So you have your little deck and I have my deck. I'm going to suggest that as a feature.
No, I'm fine. It's fine as it is, thanks.
No.
Go on then, Simon. What's your interesting story of the week?
Well, wireless charging for devices. It's not great as it stands right now, is it? We need to place it on a particular surface.
Yeah. It's pretty slow.
Pretty slow. It's just like...
It's really energy inefficient.
Yeah. Well, there's a new technology out there in development stages that's going to do it through sound.
Right.
It's called U-Beam.
Okay.
It uses ultrasound and it can charge your device by sound.
And it doesn't have to be touching?
No, as long as it can hear the ultrasound, I believe it charges.
That's just crazy. The fact that you could have something in the corner of the room that is just automatically charging any wireless device in the room.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That does seem the future of wireless charging to me.
Yeah.
Just being able to place your device down.
Don't you have to place it down, just in your hand, still using it, but it's charged.
Have it in your pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely seems like what wireless charging should be,
yeah,
no longer will our batteries go flat on devices.
But that's not necessarily a great thing, because sometimes running your battery down does your battery good.
Yeah, but we're assuming that there isn't a setting software that says only charge when you're...
Yeah.
You know, that's something that could easily be engineered.
Yeah.
It could even be done in hardware.
Yeah.
Only charge once you trigger this point, unless you say charge.
Yeah.
That's adding a step.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure it could be engineered software, hardware, to make it as efficient as possible to not destroy the battery.
Yeah. Because, the last thing you want is to ruin the energy efficiency by the fact that it's always charged to 100%.
Yeah. That's a problem. If they can make it charge through sound...
then this is a simple
problem. They can figure that problem out.
Yeah. You'd like to think so. That is pretty cool. It does seem a little bit sci-fi.
I know. So, like I said, innovation. It's all around the corner.
It's crazy, crazy, crazy. My interesting story of the week was drones are everywhere. Drones, quadcopters, multirotors,
whatever you want to call them. It's all about the drones now.
So, apparently so. the UK has just secured its first conviction for a drone flight.
What was that actually doing?
It was a guy from Nottingham. And basically,
local-ish lad.
Local-ish, north of England, represent.
Yeah, always back in law.
Yeah, but he was flying his drone over football matches. So over stadiums while football matches were happening and filming.
I'm sure he's breaking quite a few laws there.
You would think so. He also did it over some national monuments and stuff as well. But
definitely breaking laws there.
Yeah, he pled guilty to 7 counts, but kind of intimated that he'd done a lot more than that.
You've only officially caught me for 7.
Yeah, so that's all I'm...
serving time, fine.
You would ask me, wouldn't you? You would ask me a question.
I know, I'm sorry for being thorough.
I know.
I would imagine he ain't going down for that.
I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought it would be a fine. I'm quickly trying to find the story now and failing miserably. So, yeah, let's assume he got fined.
I believe it a bit.
Yeah, it probably would be a fine.
There has been some terrible incidents recently with him crashing into stadiums and stuff. Although, I actually read something. There's a register where you submit near misses.
All right.
And the drone hobbyists are now calling this into dispute.
Right.
Because they're saying that the majority of them couldn't be classed as near misses because the drone wasn't close enough. A high proportion of them are actually military drones.
Right.
So it wasn't hobbyists after all.
Yeah.
So they're saying there needs to be some type of clarification of what a near miss actually is.
Yeah.
So we need to say it needs to be within X amount of feet of this area for it to be classed as a near miss, because people are flying them near aircraft. And...
which is dangerous, and there is on some of them now, at the very least, now DJI have built it in. So there's
geo-blocking.
Ring fencing around airports and stuff like that. And they've already got the stuff built in to make sure they don't go too high.
That does need to be an industry standard, geo-blocking.
It really needs to be.
I tell you what, the first time I ever had experience of a really good drone was a couple of years ago. And the bit that amazed me is when you first set off, you could do a geolock and you say click and you say geolock. And then if it lost signal to the controller or anything went wrong, it would just return to that geo point.
Cool.
And I was just blown away. I was like, what, really?
Yeah.
And that really amazed me. This was a few years ago now. So that was actually quite impressive.
Yeah.
But have you ever actually been near one of the big drones and how noisy they are?
No, I know that I've been in a park where one was being flown above.
One of the big drones, though, or just like a little hobbyist one?
It was a Phantom, DJI Phantom.
Well, the slightly bigger drones, that can carry decent weight.
Oh, right.
I was using one. Well, I wasn't using one, but I was with a film crew that was using one the other week. So I was stood there. The drone was probably 10 feet above me. The director was 30 feet away with the megaphone.
Yeah.
Could not hear what he was saying.
Whoa.
That's how loud they are. You imagine them to just glide through the air and be relatively quiet, but drones that can carry a decent payload sound like the angriest swarm of bees you've ever heard.
The one when I was in the park, the DJI Phantom, I remember one of my kids said to me, "What's that?" And I looked up and went, "I think it's DJI Phantom," rather than "It's a drone."
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually revision number two with the extended battery life.
But I remember that just sounded like a really angry small amount of wasps or something, but it was a good, I'd say it was probably a good 100 feet above our heads at the time.
Yeah, they are very noisy. And the bigger they get, the bigger the payload, just the noisier they are.
Yeah.
In fact, the guy who I was with the other week, I think he had one, I can't remember if it was something, it was something crazy, like 100 pounds it could carry.
Wow.
You had to strip everything off it, and yeah, it had some really powerful...
Amazon's wet dream.
Yeah. And a 100-pound payload.
Yeah.
That is obscene.
Crazy.
I didn't even think it would carry that kind of payload.
I found the information out, although it's on an American site, so it's given the fine in dollars.
Okay.
$3,683.
Well, £2,200.
Yeah. And he's been banned from using or owning a drone for 2 years.
What's he going to do? Well, is he allowed an helicopter or a plane?
That is unclear.
Is it specifically a drone?
Yeah, apparently so. Or assisting anyone operating a drone either. He's not even allowed to...
Oh, that's really interesting, right? In America, God, we're talking a lot about drones now.
Yeah.
But technically, to fly a drone commercially, you need a flight license. You need a flight license.
Right.
So that means you need to be have a pilot's license, a gliding license.
Yeah.
The loophole is ballooner.
Yeah.
So people get the ballooning qualification. The other loophole is, let's say you've got a pilot's license, just, you know, you're a retired pilot. I hire you. You come down to the set or whatever, I'm using the commercial portfolio, and you actually do the flying bit while I tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you can legally do it commercially until they come up with some type of dedicated drone license.
There needs to be one, I think, especially for commercial use.
I think there does, but obviously a lot of people are just doing it without the license.
Yeah, it's one of those things again, isn't it? New technology, well, not new technology, but, you know.
Well, I can remember when I was
new affordable technology.
When I was a young kid, I really wanted a model airplane.
Yeah.
And I can remember going to the shop, and if you wanted one, they pushed you to go to a club.
Oh, right. So you could learn to fly it properly.
So you learned to fly it at the club, so there's a proper little runway. You'd go down there with like 20, 30 other people that are on planes.
That's cool.
So perhaps that's the way they should do drones. Real grassroots, pull all the hobbies together.
After school clubs.
Yeah. Our kids probably will be playing with drones at school.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're learning to code now, aren't they?
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, because I was actually looking at getting some stuff for the Pi.
Yeah.
Some of the little kids' kits you can get. You can get some for they're £15, the kids' kits.
Wow.
And you can do incredible things. Like, it comes with lots of conductive stuff, so you can make put the conductive clips onto anything, basically.
Yeah.
But the demo was lots of pieces of fruit, and then you can make the fruit play any note or any music file.
Awesome.
You want, so you can put like 10 pieces of fruit in front of your TV and go... and just play songs. I thought, God, kids will just be blown away.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
By the fact you can touch a piece of fruit when it plays a note.
Yeah. Talking of the electrodes that you could attach stuff, the BBC microcomputer thing that...
Can we buy that yet?
Raspberry Pi. It's been delayed.
Mm. Is it crowdsourced by any chance?
I doubt it if the BBC are doing it. But yeah.
I don't understand with that project why the BBC just didn't get behind Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Because the Raspberry Pi is even a British educational...
Yeah.
Because it was Cambridge University. I don't understand why they didn't get behind it.
I don't know.
One quick story about Raspberry Pi. I really like this story.
Go on.
They were trying to figure out where they could make it.
Yeah.
Very difficult, obviously, to find someone to manufacture in high quantity.
Uh-huh.
Sony agreed to manufacture it for free.
Really?
In their production plant in Wales.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I don't think they charged them for tooling or anything. So now it's over here. Yeah, it got made in Sony's plant.
That's quite the favour.
It really is, but... you know, you encourage more young kids to get into development and stuff.
Yeah.
In 20 years' time, there's more people in the industry to fulfil those jobs that you need.
Yeah.
And
cool.
It probably didn't cost as much to set up the tooling when you got that kind of setup anyway.
Did you, going back to drones very briefly, did you hear the story about the American prison and the drone?
Oh, with the drugs.
Yeah.
I love a good bit of ingenuity when it comes to crime.
Yeah. Although they needed a bit more practice with the drone because they dropped the drugs right in the middle of the exercise yard and it caused a riot. Rather than discreetly in the corner as planned.
I know, but the bugs were have a lot of bees. What's going on?
Yeah, but they could have been that high up that you wouldn't have heard it that... Because you can go hundreds of feet in the air, can't they?
That's very true. And then when you drop it, you could have wind, and that's probably why it drifted into the middle of the yard. They could have been aiming for the corner.
True.
You need to do some practice drops. No, what you could do with is a pilot's license to understand
how all that stuff works.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we should probably wrap it up there, Neil.
Okay. Yeah. So we've not done the communication thing for a while. So just to remind you, we are on Twitter at EnthusiCastTech. We have a website, techenthusiast.com, and obviously we put everything that we can on Facebook and YouTube as well. Is there anything else we do?
No, that's it for now. Some of the other services, the Strange Capping, but no. Yeah. We're getting it out there.
We're trying to get it out there as much as we possibly can. There was something I was going to say.
Could do with the script.
Then it slipped my mind completely. So, that was it. Yeah, I'm going to spend the next week trying to find a forfeit for Simon due to his mess up.
I'm going to listen back and make sure that you didn't mention it before I did. Because there was a bit where you said something and I was trying to think in my head and play it back going, did he say it? Did he say it? Did he say it? And then when I did, I obviously just head in hands thinking, I can't believe I did it. I can't believe I did it.
I'm not saying that I didn't. But I'm also not saying that I did, because if I did, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to listen back and find out if you did mention
that. That's fair enough, and then we'll both have to do a forfeit. But for now...
It's just me.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. I've been Neil.
And I'm Simon.
See you later.